Good evening. This is Amanda Manier. You are listening to the Veterans Voice here on 790 KABC. I am a veteran advocate and the managing attorney at the Veterans Law Group. We're based here in Southern California, but we certainly work with veterans all across the country and really all across the world. We've got veterans living in Thailand, Guam, Germany that we're helping out. But the majority of what we do, or all of what we do, is to help veterans and their families navigate the process of dealing with the VA to get VA disability benefits. It's kind of one of those things that we recognize that while it shouldn't be necessary to hire an attorney to get your benefits through the VA, it often becomes what is needed for many veterans in the country. There's certainly not a lack of need out there. Becomes incredibly frustrating when I talk with family and friends who are completely unfamiliar with the process that, you know, why is it that there is an entire entity that is established to take care of veterans, and yet you have to hire an attorney at times to combat some of the messiness or the ridiculousness that comes out of the VA in order to get you and your family the benefits that are needed. So we're here. We're on your side. My job as a representative is to make sure that it's easy for the VA to grant your case, to line all the ducks in a row and put the formula together so that the VA not only likes working with us, but can also get, because we make it easy for them, but also allows veterans and their families to get what they need. So this evening we are live. We are taking your calls. I'd be happy to take your calls to talk about your case. Our number here, if you'd like to reach out to us, is 800-222-5222. If you are in the process of working through a VA claim through the VA process, especially if you're in the appeals or you got a decision that you're unhappy with, give us a call. I can help point you in the right direction and see if we might be able to help you. If you are a family member of a veteran or a friend trying to help out a veteran in your life, you are more than welcome to call as well. That's how I ended up working in this industry. I was helping a friend deal with this process and was constantly surprised at how ineffective, or sometimes it just comes down to laziness, or you don't know how to ask the right, not laziness on behalf of the, laziness on behalf of the VA, the people who work there at times. I think they get a little bit too comfortable in their jobs. But you know, how can you not only just purely from, is this legal? Is this the statute? Is this what the VA is supposed to be doing versus our years of experience? And how do we get the VA to finally get you what you need? Because all day long you can say to them, well, you're supposed to and you should have. But really what it comes down to is what's the best way from a strategic standpoint to get your case to the VA. So again, we are taking your calls live this evening, 800-222-5222. And generally when we are live in the evenings like this, I like to pick a couple of topics of conversation to kind of get things started, things that I have seen or spoken with veterans over the last week about that I am seeing some frustration with, some things that I feel like I can, again, maybe kind of point you in the right direction or give you some advice on how to handle things. Also things that we're seeing that the VA is some weirdness out of the VA. If you've listened to this show, we in our office here have on a bulletin board in our conference room, couple of bulletin boards. One is all wonderful thank you notes from our clients, and the other one is what we call the VA shame board, and it's sometimes the things that are so ridiculous that are written in a rating decision that it's, you know, we have to maintain our sense of humor around here, otherwise we would all be angry all the time at the way that we see the VA is treating veterans. At the same time, I often try to curb my cynicism a little bit, because I know that if our firm works in appeals, that means a veteran gets a decision and then they're reaching out to us because they don't like the decision. So if the VA gets it right and they answer, you know, they give the veteran what they need right off the bat, those are cases that I don't see. So while I'm mentally consciously aware that those do happen, we definitely see some craziness that comes from the VA on a more regular basis than I would like to say. So tonight's topic, getting off of that, tonight's topic that I'd like to start off with, and again, your questions do not have to be about this particular topic. It can be anything about your claim. I'm happy to set aside my agenda for the evening to help out veterans and their families out there that need some help. But One of the things I wanted to talk about was claims for increase. So if you're new to this or are not familiar with the process, a veteran is granted a monthly dollar amount that they're given based upon an overall percentage of disability that was injuries that incurred while they were in the service and they have a current disability. So a veteran may have filed 20 years ago for getting out of the military and they file a claim for a back injury and perhaps a PTSD. And they get a rating of a 20% for their back and a 20 or 30% for their PTSD. And they get an overall rating of that would probably be 40 or 50% doing the VA math. Then many years later, the back injury may get worse. Generally, backs do not improve. They typically decrease over time and age. And then in addition to that, the symptoms of PTSD may become exacerbated based upon, for whatever reason, there are some studies out there that often PTSD will increase. It's very common after a retirement. And I think, you know, there's definitely some theories out there of why. But I often think that it's, you know, idle minds, I suppose, or a sense of, you know, changing in the sense of purpose and what you're doing every day. But it's not uncommon. It's actually very common for both of those things to increase over time. So what do you do if you have a rating for 20% for your back and 30% for your PTSD from 20 years ago, and you want to look into increasing that percentage because you feel like your condition has gotten worse? Nowadays, post 2019, a lot of rules changed, and rules changed in 2015, and rules changed again in 2019. And so you have to make sure now that you're filing claims on your proper form. So 20 years ago, when you originally did your claim, you could have written on a napkin that you had a back injury related to service and you were struggling with nightmares. And the VA is required at that point to process the claim and to work with you and to assist you in getting the information that they need for that claim. After the 2015, there were certain requirements, but especially in 2019, there are now three different documents that are possible to be filed, or three different claims that are possible, forms, I should say, possible to be filed, and you have to know which one to file. So I'm going to break that down a little bit on which one to file. If you are claiming something for an increase that you were previously rated on, you want to put that on a 526 form and indicate that your claim has increased. You can do that through your e-benefits. You can do that by downloading the form. My recommendation is always to go work with a veteran service officer in anything that you're doing at the VA when you're initiating a claim. So we talked a little bit about it last week. I know we had a caller that was looking for some help. While I thoroughly support a lot of the veteran service officers through VFW, DAV, some of the big organizations, Wounded Warrior, I prefer and I like to work with county veteran service officers. Most states in the entire country have a veteran service department. They call them different things, military and veteran services sometimes. But they have county veteran service officers, and what I like about them is they are typically very well educated on resources in their county, in their area, that may be outside of just the VA. So nonprofit organizations that are supporting homeless veterans, you know, if there's a specific short-term financial need, they may be in contact with a group at the VFW who is helping with that kind of thing. So I largely recommend going to a county veteran service officer to assist with that. But going back to the claim for increase, if you were previously rated for something, you later want to claim it for an increase. You want to put it on a 526 easy form, request for increase. If it's a situation where you were previously denied service connection, so they never actually connect it to your service, then you have to file that what's on a supplemental claim. It's a separate document, and you need to provide additional and new information as to new and relevant is the keyword. Information as to why your case should be reopened and what new information you have. So that may be new medical information. It may be you finally found a battle buddy who's willing to write a letter in support of your claim, but you need to include some sort of new evidence on that. if you've just been getting VA Medical Center treatment for that condition over the years, that is enough. You list it on the form, and that's enough to reopen your claim. The third one I was indicating with is if you are within your 1 year period of time. So our scenario that we were talking about was 20 years ago, and you now want to file an increase, but say it was a year ago, and now your condition has worsened, then you want to probably have the option, the third option of a higher level review. It may be that they're not necessarily looking at it worsened, but it was worse to begin with. But those key things, that 526 versus a supplemental claim, is really important, because these days, if you file the wrong claim, the VA or the wrong form, the VA will just come back and say, well, you didn't put it on the right form, and so therefore you need to submit the right form. So you may lose some time and lose an effective date if you don't file the proper claim on the right form. So that's getting a little bit into the nitty-gritty, but it's something that I've come up with and I've have dealt with a lot over the last couple of weeks, is veterans frustrated because a claim that they submitted is not being processed, and it's simply because they put it on the wrong form. So over time, the VA has made it more difficult for claims to be filed and claims to be processed than they used to be. Like I'd mentioned before, it's used to be able to call the VA and say, hey, I have a claim, or my back hurts and I think it's related to my service, or write it on a napkin and it would open up a claim. So again, one more reason, my number one advice to all veterans out there filing claims is to don't do this alone. Don't walk this alone. Work with a veteran service officer to get those initial claims processed. And if you don't like the rating decision that you got, that's when you can reach out to somebody like our office. Our website is veteranslaw.com. You're welcome to reach out. We're going to take a break, and we're going to, again, take your calls when you come back. 800-222-5222. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is The Veterans Voice. My name is Amanda Manier. I'm a veteran advocate and an attorney at the Veterans Law Group, with the managing attorney. And one of the joys of my job is to be able to host this show, The Veterans Voice, every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock, talking about things related to VA disability benefits and how I can support and help veterans and their families work through that. When we are live in the evenings, we'd love to take your calls. Our number here is 800-222-5222, answering questions about your particular claim, or maybe how to support a family member or a veteran in your life who you would like to help with their process as you see them struggling with that, or maybe just have questions about the process itself. There's a lot of changes that have gone recently over the last couple of years that our Congress has passed, and you know, we as civilians are supporting Congress and sometimes don't always know, especially with veterans issues, kind of which is, you know, nobody wants to go against any veteran legislation, but what are the pros and cons that happen? And, you know, a lot of times the fight comes down to funding, or the fight comes down to we could do better than what is currently being proposed out there. But there's been some good stuff that's come in. The PACT Act that got passed, you know, what does that mean for veterans and their families? If you're interested in that, we did a whole show on that last week, and a few weeks before that talked about the proposals of it. And it's how many veterans it's expected to affect. I believe 4 million is the estimate, 1 in 5 veterans in the entire country. And so what does that look like? Happy to discuss that as well. Again, our number here is 800-222-5222. Let's go to Lieutenant Colonel Martin is on the line. Thank you so much for joining us.
Amanda, hi, six-time caller, and I appreciate your expertise and that you're actually talking about what vets are really talking about behind the scenes. They've come to me for about 20 years as an individual vet myself, helping out other vets, and thank you for talking about what's on their mind. I wanted to piggyback what you said about the VSO as a choice. Here was some of the other in-depth about the VSO versus other. So the VSO, they're state employees. They can do VA federal and state, and their promotions, their raises, and their annual appraisals depend upon their performance. Mm-hmm. So they're really focused on giving you a good quality product, helping you with your claim. And some of the other nonprofits love them dearly, but sometimes their volunteers are low paid and they're not as motivated. But I had two questions for you tonight. One was the distinguishing VA-accredited qualified agencies, nonprofits, and their left and right limits, their restrictions. They must conform to the VA to be on their approved checklist to receive VA support to run their offices versus somebody like me or others like me who are just vet to vet, and we help them with no parameters, no shackles, no restrictions. And the last was I had another vet ask about the distinguishing between the pension and disability compensation. And I wanted to thank you very much, and I'm going to hang up and listen to your good guidance.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, I will address the first part of Lieutenant Colonel Martin's comments about VSOs. So I think in particular he was referring to county veteran service officers, so people who are working for the state or for the local county, and there are definitely some restrictions with that that may not be separate. So let's back up a little bit to how do you make sure that the person who is helping you, whether it's in the initial claims process as a veteran service officer or in the appeals process, which may be an attorney or what's called a claims agent. So in order for anybody to represent a veteran before the VA, they must be accredited by the VA, which that basically means that the VA is going to prove them in some sort of fashion. If you're an individual, like a law firm, like we are, or you are what's called a claims agent, which means you are not accredited through being an attorney, but you've jumped through hoops, taken exams, proven yourself to the VA, and they've approved you as being able to represent veterans independently of a law firm or from a veteran service organization. So those are what's called claims agents. And if you want to see whether a veteran or a claims agent or an attorney is accredited before the VA, you can search OGC, that's Office of General Counsel, accredited representative, or you can pretty much just put VA accredited representative into Google. It'll take you to a place you can search, and you can search, you could search my name, Amanda Manier, or just my last name, Manier, under attorney, and it would show you when I was accredited, what date I was accredited, and address and that kind of email and that kind of thing. So there are, and then veteran service organizations like DAV, even the counties, the VFW, all of those, the individual people who work for them are not separately accredited. It's the organization that's accredited. And then the VA depends upon the organization to do proper education requirements to the people who are representing them. So they somewhat leave it up to DAV, VFW, NACVSO, all of those, to make sure that their people are properly educated in that. And because of that, you're going to run into certainly people. Not every veteran service officer is wonderful. Many of them are. I know a lot of them. I spent years traveling and teaching at their workshops, building relationships with them, because I think that, again, they're the first line of, you know, representation for a veteran. So there's that aspect of it, but you definitely want to check out. That's why I can so highly recommend CVSOs, County Veteran Service Officers, because I know what they go through to get approved to represent veterans. I know that there are volunteers there, but they're also, if they're doing something independently. And then as Lieutenant Colonel Martin said, a lot of times they have restriction, you know, requirements, work requirements, and they're paid based upon what they do for a veteran. So I can highly endorse them. I can't necessarily endorse in a small town in Atlanta or, you know, near in Georgia, a representative from, say, the VFW, because I don't know them. And definitely, I think they mean well, but I don't know what kind of requirements or education that they have in order to properly represent a veteran. So that's that aspect of it. And when it comes to hiring an attorney, the question is, I'll just address this now because it might be in the thoughts and minds of people, of like, how does it come to a point with a veteran that they need to hire an attorney? So two things. One, when you work with an organization like ours, we work only on contingency. We'll never send a veteran a bill. We cover all of the out-of-pocket expenses. And usually when a case comes before us, they're the harder cases. They're the ones that need some out-of-pocket money to do research or to make very strong legal arguments, maybe take it up the chain of appeal for the BVA or the Court of Appeals, out-pocket money to pay an independent medical examiner to get a positive decision, how you kind of coach and work with that examiner to show them the evidence they need. You know, if I send an independent examiner, say a psychiatrist, for a PTSD examination where they were looking to see if we can service connect their PTSD, or let's go a little harder one, a bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, how do you show if they had symptoms in service when they didn't even know what it was? So how would they know that the symptoms were existing in service? So maybe they were diagnosed 3 years after service. The VA is going to deny that claim because they weren't diagnosed within the first year in service or first year. So those are some of the more complicated ones. I'm going to work with an independent medical examiner. And if you pull a claims file, the VA always wants the examiner who's issuing a decision about a case to review the entire claims file. Well, if I hand a claims file to an examiner that's thousands of pages long and not point them to what they really need to see, because maybe they have 15 different pending claims, but the one I want them to focus on in this particular case is the schizophrenia or the bipolar disorder. I know from experience, or we know as our team here from experience, how to work with those examiners to get a positive decision that we need. So generally it comes to us. And then sometimes, honestly, it's just a veteran who's frustrated with the whole system and they want a lawyer and they want somebody who's going to have their back, and we're required, or we take over the entire case, meaning you don't have to worry about deadlines. You don't have to worry about coming to me all the time to make sure that we have what we're needed. We have an incentive to make sure that all of your case gets processed through and does so in a timely manner. I was just talking with a potential client, or one that we're now accepting as a client, about 20 minutes before coming on the air here. And we were talking about how, you know, it's very easy for me to have 100% confidence in the fact that we can win somebody's case to get them the maximum benefit with the early effective date, because we are picky on what cases that we take. We want to make sure that we can 100% be behind it. So real quickly before we go to break, I think I've got enough time here to address Lieutenant Colonel Martin's other question. But I just want to remind you of our number here. We are taking your calls live. Our number here is 800-222-5222. We're talking about VA disability benefits. One of the questions that comes up a lot, and it was mentioned by our previous caller, is the difference between what the VA calls pension versus what they call disability. And I'm going to kind of cover it a little bit, and then I'll dig in a little bit more after the break. But there's kind of three different, there's what's called VA pension. There's your retirement, if you get out of the military after 20 years and you retire, which a lot of people in the general world understand as a pension, but that's going to be retirement, military retirement, that's separate. And then there's your VA disability compensation. So your retirement is based upon your service, how long you served, and that is separate, and you can get that in addition to getting your disability compensation. But you can't get both pension, VA pension, and VA disability compensation at the same time. You can get retirement and disability compensation. You can get retirement, but probably not pension, because pension is income-based. So I'm going to dig a little bit into that and kind of outline the differences between those two when we get back from the break here. But I just wanted to remind you that if you're interested in talking about your case, but maybe you don't want to do it on air, again, we're here every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock. Happy to take your calls. But I have an amazing team of people who will take your calls. Our number at our office is 888-811-0523, or the best way is to go to veteranslaw.com. There's a button that says, see if we can help you. Fill out a request for a consultation, and my amazing team will get back to you and talk with you about your case. We're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to dig a little bit more into that pension versus disability and when you qualify for one or the other, and what's the best one to pursue. We'll be right back. This is Amanda Menier on the Veterans Voice here on 790 KABC. Good evening. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We are talking about all things related to VA disability compensation, VA disability claims. I'm a veteran advocate and the managing attorney at Veterans Law Group, and we work exclusively in helping veterans and their families navigate the process at the VA to get the disability compensation that they are entitled to and deserve based upon their service. Any injury in which was incurred or aggravated while they were in service, they are entitled to a monetary benefit for as long as that condition exists. Many of times turns to be the rest of their life. It's part of the contract, as I always say, part of the contract that we signed with them when they signed up for the service. So before we went to break, we are taking your calls live this evening. I'll give you the number 800-222-5222. 800-222-5222. If you were a veteran or a family member of a veteran who is interested in asking some questions about how I can help you or how we can help point you in the right direction or just give you some advice on getting your claim through the process. Before we went to break, I was trying to give a little bit of clarification based upon a previous caller as to the difference between pension and disability compensation. And pension in this environment is a veteran's pension. It's not the retirement from the military, but they do call it pension. Just to do a very quick rundown, there are eligibility requirements for that. One being, there's a bunch of them. I'm not going to dig into all of them, but basically from a big perspective, you have to have certain kinds of service. Most of the time it has to be within a wartime environment. That's going to be, and they have specific dates for, you know, each World Wars, Korean, Vietnam, and then the Gulf War is still an open-ended August 2nd, 1990 through the present. And if you have are having financial problems or you have an income or a net worth within certain limits and you don't have a service-connected disability that outweighs that. So for an example, if you're eligible based upon your financial need for VA pension, you're not getting anything for your service-connected disabilities, or maybe you don't have any service-connected disabilities, pension typically tops out about $1,200 a month, ballpark right around there, where a disability compensation at 100% is usually a little over $3,000 a month. So it does behoove you to pursue the service-connected disabilities if you're at 100%. But if you have a condition that's not service-related, you served within wartime, so say you have a bipolar disorder that is affecting your ability to work, you have no income or very low income, but that bipolar can't be service connected, you could pursue pension. You can't, however, get pension and disability compensation at the same time. They will effectively decide and pay you whichever one is higher. So many of our clients come to us and they're getting veterans pension at $1,200 a month. We pursue their service-connected disability, get them to 100%, and then it will switch from pension to disability compensation at like $3,000 a month. So those are just some things to keep in mind as you're filing a claim and looking at the different options. I also am often educating elder law attorneys that are doing trusts and wills and estates, that if they have a veteran client, they need to make sure that they are looking into the possibilities of pursuing disability compensation over pursuing pension. So keep those all in mind. And again, we're happy to take her calls this evening, 800-222-5222. Dan in Anaheim. Dan, thank you for joining us. What can we do for you?
Yes, I was calling regarding lost records.
Okay. Tell me about it.
Difficulty in getting my records located.
Which type of records?
My basic training, the AIT records from basic training, where an injury occurred during basic.
Okay, so service treatment records during basic training.
Right.
Okay, and where have you tried to get them from?
I guess in St. Louis, Missouri, they hit a fire, it damaged some records. I think they went up to H or I or something.
Yep.
And my last name or last letter is H.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if they were destroyed or not.
So have you filed a claim with the VA and the VA saying that they can't get your records, or you're just trying to get them yourself?
No, I went before a judge, and the case has been remanded back to the courts.
Okay. And in
based
the
on our records, record seeking, trying to get records.
Okay. So here's basically what happens, that if those records were destroyed and they can't get them at all. So say that's, you know, effectively kind of the worst case scenario of they can't find your records. They admit that they were probably destroyed in the fire. There's a concept within the VA of lack of evidence doesn't mean that that didn't happen. So if they can't, you know, they can't look at your service treatment records and say that injury never happened because those records don't exist. So therefore, what is called lay evidence become much more important. Lay evidence means your testimony itself, anybody like the buddy statements, anybody who may have known about that injury or heard about the injury. And even if you don't have any, this is where hearings, I'm so frustrated on the new appeals process because of the reduction in the ability to get a hearing. But if you've been handling a case, you've already been up at the Court of Appeals, I imagine your case is probably in, remanded from the board back to the VA or remanded from the Court of Appeals to the board?
It was back to the courts. I went through a veterans legal
okay.
department, and they're helping me out, but I'm not getting no results. And the record seeking, I just noticed on my DD-214 form, my separation paper, they have like 8 listings on the bottom where all my records were sent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if they're researching those out or not for me.
Well, you definitely don't want to lean and trust completely in the VA to do what they're supposed to be doing, which means, yes, one, you should request them directly from the National Archives yourself. But if it truly is that they were destroyed in the fire, both you and the VA are both going to get we don't have those records, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in that scenario, the best recommendation I would have is for you to go before the board, which is at the Veterans Law Judge at the Board of Veteran Appeals, where you can request a hearing and you can go and give testimony to a judge and say, look, you're under oath, you know, look, my service treatment records do not exist to show this injury because they were destroyed in a fire. So I'm here under oath to tell you what happened to me. And the judge makes a determination as to whether or not he feels that your testimony is credible. And that becomes in lieu of your service treatment records that show the injury. Does that make sense?
I went before the judge. Yeah, I went before the judge and explained about my situation, how the accident happened and everything. But I never got to the point where I could ask him about the records or anything because they just kind of let that be secondary. And now we're going, that's why I was remanded back to the court. Now they're giving us time to locate my records. And it's really difficult. Mm-hmm. I've done everything I could. And
the well, here's the thing is that, go ahead.
St. Louis, I'm not too sure. I still don't know if my records are still there. I've got partial records, but Ireland, mm-hmm. Ireland Hospital in Kentucky, they had some records, but they're not all there.
Okay, so the judge at the board, if that's who you spoke with at the hearing, which I assume based upon what you said it is.
It was a video
they
conference.
They are obligated. Yes, that would have been at the board.
Right.
So they are obligated to give the VA an opportunity to track down those records, and also it gives you an opportunity to do it too.
Right.
I just want you to put you in a positive place that if those records are never found, which if they were destroyed in the fire, they're not going to be found, then your case will go back up to the board before the judge again, and then the judge has to take your testimony in lieu of those records. And say, okay, these records do not exist, so now we have to take his testimony and say whether or not we feel like his story about the injury that happened is credible. I'm just going to give you an example of, we had a situation similar to that. It wasn't destroyed records, but it was, there was nothing in his service treatment records that showed an ankle injury. And the reason why is he was over in Germany, this was years ago, he was serving in Germany. He got an ankle, and for some reason, it just wasn't in the service treatment records. How we were able to get him service connected is he found, or his wife found, a letter that he wrote to her while he was serving in Germany, talking about how he messed up his ankle and he was limping around. And so there was nothing in the service treatment records, but this was used as lay evidence in lieu of that. And then they gave testimony to the judge, and the judge ended up granting it. So I just want to confirm, just like reassure you that even if you never find these records, you can still get this pushed through if you can give proper testimony to the judge.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, certainly that does help. I also went to the VSO that you were talking about earlier, and they had told me, a guy in the Navy told me that they didn't treat the National Guard. I was in the National Guard. They didn't treat us as really military, and the records were never really kept. They were really sloppy and everything.
Yeah, and that may be something that's kind of known in the industry. And so, again, that's your chance to go before the judge and, like, these records don't exist, but here's what happened to me. And they can, you know, make a decision based upon that. Again, it goes back to lack of evidence doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It just means that we don't have evidence that it happened. So, therefore, we have to consider what they call lay evidence, which is personal testimony, letters from family members, that kind of thing. We're up against a heartbreak that I got to take. I'm sorry, Dan, but I hope that was helpful. And I hope they do find your records. But if they don't, it's not lost. We'll be right back. This is Amanda Menier on The Veterans Voice here on 790 KABC. Welcome back. This is Amanda Menier with The Veterans Voice. We are talking about all things related to VA disability benefits. Specifically this evening, we've been talking a little bit about pension versus VA disability. We've been talking a little bit about just some of the things that we see that the VA is doing, and also the all-important make sure that you're working with a representative and not doing it alone. Definitely is not an area in which I think to a certain extent, you know, I tell the story about when I first started working in helping veterans with this. It was back when you used to have to, just going to date me, but it hasn't been that long ago. It was like 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, that if you wanted to look at a veteran's claims file, you had to, first of all, request a copy, which could take 6 months to a year to get. Or if you wanted to go down to the local regional office, I happened to be in San Diego at the time, and I could go into the San Diego regional office for a client of mine, and they would take me into a cubicle and then hand me a big fat claims file for me to go through, and I could, you know, look at it for a period of time and then had to go. And what was funny to me is I walked in and I got handed this document, this big fat file, and it said in the front of it was a bright pink sticker that said, I don't think it's used the word caution, but it was something like that. And it's a private attorney case. And, you know, they'll say very publicly that a veteran who is represented at all represented versus doing it on their own, if they're represented by a VSO or an attorney, that there's no special consideration that's given. But I beg to differ in that. They do raise the attention, and I've had certain people within the VA that have told me a couple of things. When there is an attorney that is assigned to it, they do pay attention because they know, you know, they're probably not going to get away with being lazy on that case. And second of all, it's been part of what my desire is to be at the Veterans Law Group, the firm that I'm the managing attorney at, is to have the VA have a perspective of us as we're not going to put up with BS. We're going to make sure the veteran gets what they need. But at the same time, I'm going to make it easy for you, as easy as I can, for the VA to grant the case. I'm going to put all the ducks in a row. I'm going to make the formula very easy to say that it's going to, you know, this is why you should grant this case, because there's this evidence, and this evidence. And so maybe they don't have to go through 2,500 pages of medical records to find what they need. And to me, that is a balance of creating a good environment working with the VA that they appreciate. And, you know, I had a decision review officer a few years ago tell me that he likes working on our cases because when he sees that we're the power of attorney, he knows that there's something to that case. It's not just a frivolous appeal or a frivolous claim. So that is part of my desire in doing what I do in representing veterans. But in addition, we were talking about not doing it alone. Veteran service officers are really great to be able to help you file those initial claims, because attorneys like our office, we only work in appeals. If the VA doesn't get it right, or the VA underrates your claim or denies you, that's where we get involved. The last thing I wanted to touch on, because it's just has come up, we are taking your calls. Let me take that. I will take your call first, 800-222-5222, before I jump into my subject that I was anticipating talking about in this last block here. But I would always rather help you guys with your claims before I do anything else. But the last thing that I was going to bring up is just some things that have come up over the last couple of weeks in our office, where we're seeing the VA often severely, underrate orthopedic claims. So orthopedic being, you know, your cervical, your neck, your lumbar, your lower back, knees, ankles, but specifically related to lumbar and cervical. I was just looking at a case earlier today where he was rated 10% for each one of those, for the cervical and the lumbar, and nothing else. And I was just a little surprised. I was like, in talking with him about like a 10% rating on a back or a cervical is relatively low. It's basically saying, well, you can have your full range of motion. It's just that you might have some pain when you make that range of motion. So in talking with him, there's a couple things I look at when it comes to orthopedic stuff. And this is some things that have changed over the years, not only from, you know, statutory changes, but also court cases that have come down and has told the VA that they need to handle those claims differently. But first of all, when it comes to the back claims, cervical or lumbar, the VA rates it based upon range of motion. And they have a, you know, statute that says if you have this range of motion, you're 10%. If you have this range of motion, you're a 20%. Now, when you go to that examination and you're getting examined for that range of motion and you're getting measured at that range of motion, they're supposed to initially stop at the point of which you first feel pain and not push you past that limit, and they should measure at that point. And I've heard stories from our clients all day long about the examiner kind of pushed them to move over, to bend over a little bit more, or pushed them to move your neck, or challenged them to move their neck more. So there's that aspect of it, and that's just on any day going in for a C&P exam. But separately from that, two things. One is that they should also look at what they call flare-ups, and that means that on a particular day or during a particular year or season, sometimes related to the weather, sometimes related to overuse, you would have what's called a flare-up, a particular period of time in which your range of motion is less, your pain is higher. Some people at that point are, you know, I just go lay down, and sometimes it's 3 days. It's that whole thing of I threw my back out. I tweaked my back. In that case, the VA, most people have flare-ups. So there has been a court case that allowed and required the VA in the examination to ask about flare-ups. Do you have them, yes or no? Are you experiencing them, one right now? If you're not and you have them, you need to, you know, please describe them to me. Does it affect your range of motion? Does it affect your, you know, your pain level? How much more medication are you taking? So they're supposed to ask a lot of those questions. And way often I see in a C&P examination report that the examiner never asked that question, or they'll say, do they have flare-ups? They'll say no. And then in talking with the veteran, they were like, well, I never got asked that question. So when I'm looking at challenging something like that, like a 10%, the first thing I'm going is to the examination, talking with the veteran about it to find out how accurate is this examination. Did they ask you all these questions? Did they truly do measurements for you on your range of motion? And if any of those things are untrue or didn't, you know, happen, we can challenge that examination, get a new examination, and work with the veteran on what they should and shouldn't say, not just based upon what they're asked, but based upon getting it on the record of the symptoms that they have and the condition that they have that's going to support a higher rating. So that's one thing on range of motion and pain and flare-ups. The other are completely separate on either your cervical or your lumbar, is what is called radiculopathy. So radiculopathy is often, people think about it as like a sciatic nerve. It's a, maybe your, you know, your lower back often will cause maybe some tingling sensation or a shooting pain down one or both of your legs at times, whether it goes down to your knee all the way down. And depending upon how severe it is, one, does it exist? Do you have that? And the same thing can happen from the cervical that goes into your arms. If you have either one of those, the VA is supposed to separately rate those, even if you don't ask for a rating for those. It's what's called an inferred claim, meaning that because you have that condition, so maybe they'll give you 20% for your back. And if you have that shooting pain or numbness in each one of your lower legs, those are usually rated at 10, 20, or 40%. So a 10% meaning mild, you might just have some tingling and numbness at times. Moderate, where it's more of a pain and it shoots further down, and severe, where it's definitely more debilitating. So all four of your extremities can have a separate rating for this radiculopathy. So in the case that I was talking about earlier, before we went on the air, that I was talking with this client, or he's going to now be a client. He had a 10% for cervical, 10% for lumbar. Nothing was listed as radiculopathy. And in talking with him, I believe that we can get him at least 20% on the cervical and the lower and 10% on all four of his extremities. So that takes a very simple 10 and 10 and can probably turn it into quite a bit more than that. And that's just part of, you know, it's, you know, he had no idea. He was like, yeah, I have that, but I didn't know what it was called, and I wasn't really asked. And I think, you know, oftentimes even a examiner will ask a veteran, do you have radiculopathy? And the veteran doesn't necessarily know what that, it's a medical term, so doesn't necessarily know what that means. And so it's like, well, I don't know, or no. And in reality, it should be dug into a little bit more. And I often am looking at examination reports and wishing that the examiner would be pro-veteran in the sense that they don't have to lie for the veteran, but they can be like, is there anything else that's here? Is there anything else that I can, you know, put on this piece of paper, put on this report to the VA that's going to help support your claim? And I'm sure it often comes down to, most examinations are now done by outsourced contractors, and I'm sure they're paid per examination, and it's not in their best interest necessarily to spend more time than necessary in, you know, putting together that report that's going to be pro-veteran. They're going to see this veteran for 20 minutes and probably never see them again. And, you know, that's the, I guess, situation that we're dealing with. But the more that I feel like I can educate you all as veterans and you all as veteran service officer and those of you who are listening to be proactive when you go into these examinations, knowing what you need to, information you need to get on the record for them. Then, of course, the next step is making sure it gets put in the record. And if it doesn't, how do you combat that? So that's a large part of what we do. Again, I work at the Veterans Law Group. You can reach out to us at veteranslaw.com. We do initial consultations for free. Veteranslaw.com. We are here every night on the Veterans Voice, every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock. We will be taking your calls and talking about veterans benefits. We will see you next Tuesday evening. Good night.